It's not a cold open, but it does open in the cold after an awesome new intro that we'll break down separately. Episode 1, called A Sun for a Sun, is a fantastic new start full of callbacks and references. Many things in this episode show and or tell us of recurring traditions, such as the one started by Torrhen Stark, the king who knelt a century or so ago. It calls for 1 in 10 men from his household to join the Night's Watch. Or why in Arya's time well over a century later, the Red Keep is full of cats with nary a rat catcher to be seen. The first word of the episode is duty, and it is a central theme of the episode, but paired with conflict, the sort that makes one's duty difficult to determine. The duty of the North to support unity in the South and remember their oaths, but also to send men, sometimes to their own family, to the Wall when winter is coming. The duty of the King to defend the small folk, but also to win the war for his family and to avenge those who do it harm. The duty of a Queen in conflict with the inherent duties of motherhood, as Daemon tells Rhaenys, the mother grieves as the Queen shirks her duty. The duty of Kingsguard, how are they to know what to do when the House of the Dragon, whom they swear to protect, turns on itself? It's a question worthy of Jaime Lannister's conflicting oaths. There's also the duty of Allen, as he himself puts it, to save Lord Corlys in battle. The conflict in this particular scene is implied rather than explained. For now, give it time. The phrase dark wings, dark words is also implied rather than spoken when word arrives for Lord Cregan from Dragonstone about the death of Luke, making war all the more certain. You might recognize the song playing in the opening northern scene as well, a familiar haunting tune that many would call the Stark theme. It also debuts back in that very first episode of Game of Thrones when Jon Snow leaves for the Wall, parting with Robb Stark. They expect to see each other again, but never do. Fittingly, the song is called Goodbye Brother, and damn is it ever a sad song by itself, let alone with the knowledge that Jace learns, while standing atop the Wall, like Jon Snow, another man with uncertain ancestry, that he too will never see his brother again after being killed under treacherous and vengeful circumstances. Cregan has much and more to say about winter and duty, but when he reads the message from Dragonstone telling of Luke's death, he's speechless. War does demand the sacrifice of children, but usually that sacrifice comes during the war, not before. Aemond will later claim the war had already begun before his act, or Vhagar's act if you prefer, so I suppose it's a matter of perspective, as Aemond's own actions are seen as quite different, not only in his own eyes, but of his family, and even more differently in the eyes of, say, Daemon or Rhaenyra. But in this episode, as Helaena tells Aegon, it's not the dragons, but the rats she's afraid of. And it's the ravens that bring the news for many in this one as well, as it did for Rhaenyra just as the season concluded. Rhaenys experienced the same when a raven came to her long ago with news that her daughter Lena died. Daemon is angry and wants to kill both Vhagar and her rider, as he puts it, and echoes the episode title saying it would be a son for a son, but softens a bit at the mention of Vhagar's previous rider, his deceased wife. He lashes out and blames Rhaenys for the death of Luke, though, who would still be alive if she had incinerated the Greens when she had the chance. Rhaenys declares that Rhaenyra is not as lost to vengeance as he seems to be, but the only words the Queen speaks in the entire episode are, "I want Aemon Targaryen," showing that she is closer to Daemon's frame of mind than Rhaenys seems to have believed, though surely not so similar as to expect the death of a toddler. Rhaenyra searches around the region of Storm's End for tangible proof of her son's death, and eventually finds it. When she returns, she utters that singular wish and holds a funeral for Luke after Jace returns too. As they consign Lucerys' personal belongings to the flames, as Targaryen tradition demands, the scene is paralleled with Alicent at the Great Sept lighting candles in honor of her deceased. First, she names her mother Allery Florent, then King Viserys, who was her husband. Then, after some trepidation, she too names Lucerys, and notably calls him Velaryon. Luke's death is also raised during the conversation between Allen and Lord Corlys. Allen mentions his brother the shipwright, which seems to give Lord Corlys a moment's pause, but the pause when Allen presents Corlys with a dagger meant for Prince Lucerys is even longer. Allen seems to have a command role, informing Lord Corlys that 7 more ships have been sent out to reinforce the incomplete blockade, while Lord Corlys wants his own ship repaired to lead the effort, though it will be weeks, according to Allen. The blockade, though incomplete, is sufficient to capture the White Worm as she flees King's Landing, perhaps for Essos. Instead, she ends up in the dungeons of Dragonstone upon the orders of an angry Prince Daemon who blames her for putting Aegon on the throne. Though she denies doing anything more than profiting from it, or perhaps beating it along a bit at worst. Daemon's actually right, though she manages to convince him otherwise. But we know that she did actually tell Otto at the time that she could have killed Aegon easily and to remember that it was her who put him on the throne as much as anyone else. In retrospect, she overplayed her hand in that incident as her threats resulted in her establishment being burned to the ground. That was Otto's way of remembering her. The only silver lining for her seems to be the widespread belief that she's dead, meaning they aren't looking for her any longer. stronger, for now. Because she is complicit, or at least would be so in the eyes of the Greens if they knew, in giving Damon crucial information that leads to the incident that history now remembers as Blood and Cheese. We first see the man known as Cheese in the corner of the small council chambers. Allison and Sir Criston, just after hooking up, arrive there and pass in front of Cheese with his dog as he's leaving. They will again be hooking up when Blood and Cheese infiltrate the keep at the end of the episode, even though Allison declares they have to stop. They take no notice of Cheese, nor does anyone else. Otto instead gives both Cole and his daughter a look as if he suspects their relationship. The early scene in the small council also sets up the horror at the end by having young Prince Jaehaerys so close by in this scene as well. It's a sign of the king making up for his own lack of education in such matters by overdoing it with his son a bit early. Young Jaehaerys' presence is almost lighthearted, but it's a cruel bit of foreshadowing, along with Aegon himself failing to recognize which of his twins is the boy, just like the confusion of the murderers when finding them lying side by side. Aegon also invites his brother Aemon to the meeting, who declares that they must take Harrenhal, just as Daemon wants, but Otto declares that they must be patient now that they've reminded the realm of what Vhagar can do. After a look from Alicent, Criston tells Aegon that he must not risk himself directly in battle. Aegon is visibly perturbed by the notions of patience and caution, but seems to accede to them. For now. Larys comes to Allison just after the session to inform her that he's completed his investigations and executed all the traitors in their household. Clearly he missed at least one rat catcher, but whether he'll be blamed for it remains to be seen. In the meantime, Allison is uncomfortable at the news Larys has hired all her new staff personally, which manifests in her sending all her maids away when she's taking a bath. Does he know about her dalliances with Sir Criston? Larys also watches from the gallery above while Aegon holds court. Fresh off a huge dose of validation by the commoners during his coronation, he's feeling generous and wants to maintain his popularity. Yet he's at odds with Otto over how to handle the assembled petitioners. He reverses one decision regarding tribute for dragon fodder after the Hand insists, but refuses to budge on the matter of paying the blacksmiths in advance. They're represented by a man named Hugh who couldn't possibly have a further role in the show. Larys sees an opportunity in the disagreements between King and Hand, and reminds Aegon that Otto was his father's hand, leaving unspoken that he is within his rights to name his own new hand, someone more in tune with his style of rule, perhaps? We see that while the Blacks are in stasis while waiting for Rhaenyra to recover from grief, the Greens are beset by internal squabbles and power struggles. One of those squabbles, one that has been running since season one, may have actually been resolved, though. Allison confronts Otto, asserting that, despite being on the same page, as to the path to victory, he's undermining her authority over her sons, authority they very much need if they are to maintain control over their faction. Otto and Alicent believe they understand the minds of Aegon and Aemond, that the former will eventually grow bored with ruling, allowing them to take over, and that the latter is angry. There's a lot of evidence they're wrong, however. Soon after, Sir Criston and Aemon have their own session, one that very much parallels the one with Otto and Allison, including Aemon declaring that Allison is angry. In addition to calling his own mother by her first name, he also believes she's a hypocrite for blaming the war on him, and a fool for loving their enemy. Sir Criston responds, probably because he's sleeping with her, by recalling his take from season one to Allison herself, where he declared Rhaenyra to be a spider, and tells Aemon that Allison's not to blame. Still, they agree that they should privately ask Aegon to send them with an army to force the Crownlands into submission. They discuss tactics, using coins as markers on their map. As they plan this campaign and how to enact it, Daemon's plan to kill Aemon is already underway thanks to Mizari's connections, which he trades for her freedom. Daemon also uses coins, but as bribes, not as markers. He recruits a large man to kill Aemon and a rat catcher with knowledge of Maegor's tunnels. The two of them pass through the same drainage tunnel Arya will exit from many years later and proceed to work their way through the Red Keep, which includes passing right through the throne room. Just as Cheese had earlier passed through the small council room and been ignored, he tells Blood to keep his eyes down, and they'll be ignored here as well. Neither of them do. Blood can't help but stare directly into the face of what must be a new statue of King Viserys, while Cheese can't help but look at the king on his throne, drunk on strong wine while chatting about what nickname he should establish for himself with his friends. Suggested names include Aegon the Generous and Aegon the Dragonheart, but he seems to really like Aegon the Dragoncock most of all. We return to Cole and Aemon's plotting, only to hear it interrupted by footsteps approaching. As Criston reaches for his sword, we wonder if Blood blood and cheese are about to appear, but it's only Otto. He sees what they're doing and orders Cole to return to his post, then proceeds to simultaneously win over and chastise Aemond, who declares he's only doing his duty to his house. Otto reminds Aemond of the value of discipline, challenging him to be better than his brother. A clever thing to say, as we know Aemond sees himself as superior to Aegon, given his comments last season. We don't see the conversation end, but it clearly does, and both of them leave the room to go elsewhere. This may have saved Aemond's life, though perhaps he would have been able to defend himself against Blood and Cheese, who enter the royal apartments through a secret door. Blood steals the map marker coins, while it's Cheese's turn to be mesmerized by Targaryen artwork, a mural of Harrenhal's burning, it seems. Otto's interruption had the potential to save young Prince Jaehaerys as well, assuming Sir Criston's duty was guarding him and his sister and the queen, but instead he was with Alicent. While they're going at it, Blood and Cheese stumble upon a hapless and innocent Helaena, who is forced to reveal which of her two children is the boy, a regular Sophie's Choice, and again, they declare the episode's title, A Son for a Son. When they set upon, with disturbing sound effects, the even more hapless and more innocent Jaehaerys, the queen grabs his twin sister and runs off, eventually entering the bedroom where Alicent and Sir Criston believe themselves to be hidden, the very bedroom Criston slept with Rhaenyra, in fact. Ignoring their affair, Helaena simply sits down in the corner. Alicent asks what's wrong, and Helaena replies in an almost flat voice that they killed the boy, ending the episode. This is a final grim call back to episode 1 of Game of Thrones. In that one, another queen and another lord commander are caught sleeping together by an innocent boy, whom they try, but fail to kill. We don't learn that until episode 2, though, just as we don't know what the fallout will be for the death of Prince Jaehaerys. His won't be the only head to roll, so to speak. It's not exactly what Daemon wanted, though he's probably okay with it. It's not at all what Rhaenyra wanted, and she likely won't be okay with it, and it's definitely not what any of the Greens wanted, and definitely won't be okay with. Aegon's newfound patience and caution are likely at an end, as is the notion that Vhagar is keeping them safe, and the internal power struggle is about to heat up like a dragon headed to war. Join us all season long for long and short form coverage, and in between TV seasons for deep dives into a wide variety of book-centric topics.